This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Stay sharp.
Glad to have you with us on this Friday, along with former Fighting Irish quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We are just 8 days away from the Cotton Bowl.
About time.
Mr. Sharpley. I know. I mean, it is a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
I had to think about that for a second. Yeah,
it is.
It is almost here. It almost seems like it's been 2 or 3 months since that USC game.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I was thinking about this when I was driving in to do the show today. Is this the first time we've been face to face since we were out at Four Winds Casino?
I think so.
I think you're right. That was the day before the USC game.
Yeah,
day after Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. Happy Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
There we go. We got them all in.
That's right. Well, speaking of Four Winds Casino, we're going to be out there again next week. We are making our return to Four Winds, and we've got a lot of different stuff going on, of course. We're giving away 30 of those commemorative green shamrock caps.
All right.
First 30 people who show up get a cap. You have one, right?
I do.
I have one on my desk.
Pretty sharp.
Doesn't fit my head, unfortunately, so I can never wear it anywhere. But it is. I mean, it's a really good-looking hat. So the first 30 people next week out at Four Winds Casino South Bend, I know I have to mention that first 30 people get one of those free caps, and also we're giving away one of those DeWalt yellow,
that's right,
really cool looking portable radios, like you can take it
so you can listen to
that's
Sean
right.
and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch every
absolutely
Friday.
Or maybe hook up your podcast, whatever you want to do. So we're going to be registering people to win that, so come on out and see us next Friday. We'll be out there between 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, Four Winds Casino South Bend. Stop on out and see us. And of course, you can stop on out for Four Winds Casino South Bend anytime you'd like. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Visit sharpleytraining.com or look them up on any of your social media platforms. Just search Sharpley Training. And I know you've got some new stuff going on over there, and we'll talk about that in our next segment. A lot of different stuff going on over at Sharpley Trading, new schedule of things going on out there. Well, of course, signing day was this week, and this is the second year for the early signing period, the December signing period. And it seems like, Evan, it's working out really well for Notre Dame. Like, they have found a niche in terms of using this December early signing period to their advantage.
When this switch occurred, I knew it was going to be, I think it was going to be very helpful for Notre Dame. And I talked about it at length then, just with, when you look at the type of schools that would benefit from this, academic schools certainly that have that mixture in. A lot of times, Notre Dame's talked about the right type of player, right kind of player, right fit. You hear that a lot with Notre Dame players. Once they commit, there's not a lot of wavering back and forth. You don't see a lot of guys flip. They want to get this thing done.
Right.
So I knew as soon as the NCAA went with this early signing period, I figured Notre Dame would have probably their entire class, maybe save 2 or 3 guys that would sign this early signing period. And then you'd see an increase also, too, in early enrollee guys that would want to show up in this within this next semester to be able to participate in spring football. So it was I knew it was going to be a huge win, but I think that the coaching staff has done a really nice job here in year two in buckling down. I mean, they knew exactly what they wanted to do as far as how they were going to market to these athletes, but then went out there and executed their plan, filling some specific needs within their class. And then it's always nice then when the signatures come in and you're like, man, you know, we've got a couple of months now where we can kind of relax. And you can start to shift. Here's what you can do, Sean, is you can start to shift now your attention to next year's class.
Yeah.
And really ramp up the amount of, you know, the amount of pull or contact, certainly within the NCAA's realms of what you're allowed to do. But you can now start to turn your focus on what next year's class is going to look like, too.
And the class, and we've been talking about it the last couple of days on Sports Beat, but just a quick refresher. A total of 21 players signed to scholarships, including or as well as two preferred walk-ons. Connor Radigan, the wide receiver from South Bend St. Joseph, one of the two preferred walk-ons. The other one, kicker Harrison Leonard, who they think is going to have a chance to come in and compete for the job, so that's good. So there's a chance that he could end up being a scholarship guy.
Get some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. Justin Yoon. Then you've got just one running back, Kyren Williams. He's a smaller kind of guy, 5'9". In fact, probably the smallest guy in the whole class. But then one quarterback, Brendan Clark. You like signing one quarterback per class?
I do, yeah.
Just to be on the safe side,
yes.
Sort of, so you keep your
I think you always take one.
Yeah.
You know, guys are going to come and go. And in the landscape in college football now, it's becoming more popular to leave. But you want to take a quarterback, at least one quarterback per class. And I think that the discussion within the coaching staff is, I mean, if you hit a home run with a guy who is, you know, a potential first round draft pick, you may look for, you know, certain traits in the following class that maybe aren't on that same level, but is a guy that if he does have to play, he's going to be a great player. You know, if we look back over the course of the last 4 or 5 years and how Notre Dame has recruited quarterbacks, you know, there's been, I don't think too many people, you know, coming out of high school would have predicted the type of success that Ian Book had this year. There were a lot of people that really liked him, but I think we hear Brian Kelly talk about traits a lot of times. You want guys that are going to come in, they're going to work hard, they're going to develop within the weight room, and the football IQ, the things maybe that aren't necessarily on paper, you know, the stats, kind of throw those out the window. Those are important to a certain extent, but, you know, does this guy understand the game, especially at the quarterback position too? If you are going to bring in a guy in each class, there's got to be a role. Can he hold the clipboard? Can he signal the plays in?
Yeah.
Can he break down a defense? And then if he ultimately has to play, is he going to be able to run the operation? So I think Notre Dame has done a good job dating back to Mike Sanford and now Tommy Reese as well in highlighting guys with those specific traits that can run this offense.
And so also punter Jay Bramblett, number 2 ranked punter nationally from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You got 4 offensive linemen, 4 linebackers, 4 defensive linemen, 4 defensive backs, basically 2 safeties, 2 corners. And you've got 2 4-star guys at every defensive position, which I think they continue to really build this thing around both the defense and the interior offensive line, defensive lines. A school record 10 early enrollees well. And that was something, you were here with Charlie Weiss. You were telling me before we went on the air, you guys were the first class who could actually show up in the summer early, let alone in the spring. You were the first guys to show up in the summer early started.
You know, I was part of a lot of changes that started at Notre Dame. Charlie Weiss brought a lot of these there. Ty Willingham, he had his hand in a few of them as well. Where, you know, dating to prior classes than mine, a lot of times Notre Dame was not allowed or able to offer athletes until they had actually been accepted through admissions.
Wow.
Stanford was another school that was doing something similar as well. And that started to shift too, where you could offer athletes. Now, they still had to be accepted. there still was that. But, you know, to be able to put that offer on an athlete's table and say, we really like you a lot. You know, there are a lot of athletes that we're not really sure if Notre Dame likes us because they haven't offered us. Well, technically speaking, they couldn't until they had gone through NCAA clearinghouse, had gone through Notre Dame's admissions. So that was one big step in the right direction. The second then was getting athletes on, you know, on campus as freshmen. So most times, and at that time when I was coming to Notre Dame, that was not happening. We were part of the first batch of athletes, and there was a collection of basketball players, football players, soccer players, that were on campus then taking classes during our summer after we had just graduated from high school. So now fast forward to what's going on is you're seeing more athletes, and this took place to a larger extent once Charlie Weiss took over.
Right.
Was guys early enrolling within the, you know, the winter spring semester so that they could come in, work out, do our early morning winter workouts, and then be eligible for spring practice. And if athletes have an opportunity to do that, I tell them all the time, do it. if you can acclimate, instead of your acclimation period being a brief summer, because the summer is really only a couple months, and then fall camp starts.
Right.
And if you haven't picked up whatever you're supposed to be picking up within the couple months that you're there in the summer, forget about trying to learn it in fall camp, because it's time to play. You know, you're a couple of weeks away from the season starting, and if you don't have it, you're not going to get it. So now, if you're able to get guys here in the spring, that's their acclimatization period, where it's a little slower pace. You know, you can make the offense and the defense a little more vanilla. There's more teaching going on. There isn't the pressure of playing every week against another opponent, or the game plan changing every week.
Almost like a redshirt year, but you're not missing out on any games.
And from an academic side, too, you know, there's a little less pressure as well to kind of get your feet wet into what college classes are like from a social perspective, too. So I think it's a really smart move, and for Notre Dame to continue to build on that, and now, you know, the record most amount, I think bodes really well for the guys that are getting in there for their development. It closes the gap, so I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these guys within this 10 see the field in the fall just because of that. Now, some may not, just based on the depth chart. But I think it bodes really well. So then once you get into the fall, you already have an install of the playbook under your belt. You're like, man, I've gone through this. So now, instead of, you know, your head spinning, it's a little more focused. You're starting to take specific notes on, oh, I remember we already went through that. So it's huge for development, Sean. And then, you know, now with some of the new redshirt rules, you know, guys that are coming in the spring, they're going to have a better chance of playing in five games. They might not be an actual starter, but now we're saying, okay, you've enrolled early. So by the time, let's say they don't start until they're a sophomore, a redshirt sophomore, they have gone through an early enrollee spring, a summer, a fall install, played in five games, another spring install, a summer, another fall, and then could start. So experience and development.
And all that, and they're just going into their sophomore year.
Correct, and they could still then really start for 4 years.
Yeah.
Because they would have taken that red shirt but still played in five games.
Well, and guys like Robert Hainsey, he showed up, he early enrolled, and it turned into splitting time as a true freshman.
Aaron Banks was another one, too.
Exactly.
And then he's a starter this year.
Yep, exactly. And it's got to help. Both from the academic, as you said, it's just a win-win all the way around. The one thing I look at, okay, so punter Jay Bramblett is one of the guys coming in. So mostly we're talking about, for a punter, I would have to think that most of it is going to be on the academic side, where he's going to really benefit.
Well, let's see what Brian Polian wants him to do.
And then, well, and you are losing Tyler Newsom, so he's a guy who's going to have a shot.
That might have been a discussion with how involved Tyler has been in this program as a leader, both on and off the field. Instead of, you know, missing that opportunity to have Tyler even take him under his wing for a short period of time, you know, granted Tyler's not going to be a part of spring practice, but, you know, to be around the program, he's still going to be here, still going to be around, you know, preparing for whatever his next step is, I think is a smart move.
All four offensive linemen in this class are enrolling early, and then three of the defensive linemen in this class enrolling
Perfect.
Early. Boom! Get
them in the weight room. I mean, right. You look at the size of these guys, too. I mean, and four really good offensive linemen. If there's something Notre Dame has done well over the past decade plus, is recruit offensive linemen and develop them. You know, Quinn Carroll, 6'6", 295. Then the other guys go 6'4", 285, 6'6", 300, and 6'5", 270. So, you know, they all have good frames and good build. Getting into this strength and conditioning program, I think, is going to help them immensely.
And that is something that Brian Kelly mentioned. He sort of talked about the priorities of this group, and two of them were offensive line, defensive line, and then along with that, what you just mentioned. Length was the specific word that he used.
Can't teach it.
Nope, exactly. And here's Brian Kelly talking about why that is important.
The ability to develop, right? The ability. None of these guys are necessarily ready-made, but they will be as we continue to develop them in our strength and conditioning. 6 foot, 6'1", you're tapped out. You know, we can't get you much bigger. You are who you are. We could change some of your profile, but with that length, it gives us so much more of a canvas to work with when it comes to the strength and conditioning elements, and that's really what we were looking for.
And you, Evan, as a guy who works with people, just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you could get people bigger, faster, and stronger. There are methods where you're able to do that. You can track that. You can track and develop speed in the weight room as far as bar speed, whether it's squatting or benching or deadlifting. You know, those are all things that once you get guys on campus that you can focus and work on. They're in to a certain extent with speed and strength. There is some biological factors and genetics that are into that, where some are prone to maybe more explosive gains than others, and some guys have to work a little bit harder.
Fast twitch guys versus long twitch guys.
But you know, at the same time, you can't teach the 6'6" with super long arms and great levers, you know, at the offensive line position, or even at the defensive line position too, or for that matter, safety and corner. I mean, you're seeing more guys, at least in Notre Dame's defense, where you know, length is really important to make plays on the football when the ball is in the air, and then also you know, at the defensive end position is being to create some upfield angles, whether it's the length of your levers with your lower half or your upper body too, to be able to pressure and make the quarterback feel more uncomfortable.
Well, and I look at a guy like Drew Tranquil, for example, a safety coming out of high school. He's 6'2", so he's just above what Brian Kelly was talking about. But he was a safety in high school. They brought him here to play safety, but he ends up playing Rover, basically kind of an outside linebacker position, and then moves into Buck this year. But he had room on his frame, kind of what he said. He had some of that length, had room on his frame, whereas he obviously needed to bulk up when you're moving in to inside linebacker. But he hasn't lost any of his mobility. He's just as fast now, and probably even more explosive than when he came in the door.
Defensively, I think we're seeing a shift in the type of players that Notre Dame is recruiting. And really, this dates back to when Mike Elko arrived in the 4-2-5 defense, where they wanted more hybrid guys that could play or could develop into multiple positions. Is this guy a safety? Is he a rover? Is he a linebacker? I don't know. He could be one of those three. We might not know today. We might not know as an 18-year-old high school football player what he's going to develop into. But let's get him on campus. Let's see, you know, his abilities. Let's see what he does on the football field. And he's most likely going to start to, based on personality, based on depth chart, he's going to start to slide toward one of those. Now, that doesn't mean he might play that position for a year, and then he might go somewhere else. But I think what it does is it gives you, well, let's use a baseball example, right? A lot of managers, they like to have guys with position versatility. You don't want a guy that can just play one position.
Right.
Can this guy play the outfield if we needed him to? Could he play third base? Could he play shortstop? You know, you like guys that have some position versatility because it helps you, you know, change what your game plan may be from week to week, game to game. So I think Notre Dame has done a really good job starting with Mike Elko defensively, and then Clark Lee now taking, and Mike Elston has done a great job recruiting as well, but getting guys that can over time shift into a couple of different spots. Is he a three technique? Is he a defensive end? Is he a weak side guy, strong side guy? You know,
right.
Having those options, I think it helps you build a team that is fast and athletic.
Absolutely. And just finishing up on the early enrollee guys, again, you've got the four offensive linemen, three defensive linemen, Kyron Williams, the running back, linebacker Jack Kaiser, Mr. Football in Indiana, punter Jay Bramblett are the record 10 guys who are going to be enrolling early this spring. We are coming up on 20 minutes after 12 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. I tell you what, we'll go ahead and take a break. and we can jump in a little bit more specifically to Notre Dame Clemson and the Cotton Bowl. We'll be doing more of that next week, obviously, It'll be the day before the game. But we'll take a break right now. When we come back, we will do some of that. There's some other stuff that I want to get into today as well. Aaron Bond, a guy you've worked with before, yeah, right? Former Clay guy, going up against Trevor Bauer, the Indians pitcher, in the batting cage. We'll do that.
Over a drive line in Washington.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And also, Purdue head coach Matt Painter made some comments last week after Purdue's loss to Notre Dame down at the Crossroads Classic. And I want to play that for Evan and get some of your thoughts on that as well. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Sharpley Training. Also brought to you by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Curt Outdoor Living, make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Curt Outdoor Living. By Carmelo's at McCree's, the perfect place for holiday parties for your business, group, and family. For lunch or dinner, reserve yours today. By Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, voted the best tire store 2 years in a row. By Lechleitner Door, they open all the right doors, residential, commercial, and agricultural. Call 295-6311. By Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time at the corner of State Road 23. And also brought to you by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Leo E. Premer in South Bend or Jim Hipschman in Mishawaka. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. We're coming up on 26 minutes after 12 o'clock on this Friday. Cotton Bowl in Arlington, Texas, 1 week from tomorrow. And you'll hear it here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We have an interesting schedule a week from tomorrow. Game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Grau. You guys are on at 8 a.m., correct?
Yes.
That's what I thought. So
I can dig it, though.
Yeah.
I like coffee.
Why not? You're on at 8 a.m. Game Day Sports Beat begins at 9 a.m. here on 96.1 WSBT. And the reason for that, we're going to go up to 11:40 next Saturday morning when Notre Dame basketball pregame begins. And Darren Pritchett will be filling in for Jack Nolan because Jack will be down at the Cotton Bowl doing his sideline reporting. So it'll be Notre Dame and Coppin State 1 week from tomorrow on the hardwoods at Purcell Pavilion. Tip off at noon. And then when Darren wraps things up at around sometime between 2:15, 2:30, most likely, we'll continue with an extra 30 minutes of Game Day Sports Beat leading you right into the network pregame show. Kickoff at 4 o'clock Eastern time here on WSBT, and then, of course, after the game, Reggie Brooks and I have the post-game show, and then when we wrap up, some 2 hours after the game ends, you will join in progress Alabama versus Oklahoma in the other semifinal down at the Orange Bowl in Miami Gardens, Florida. So that is all coming up 1 week from tomorrow here on 96.1 WSBT. Okay, so Evan, again, December 29th, a week from tomorrow, Notre Dame versus Clemson. Notre Dame's first trip to the college football playoff. What gives you the most reason for optimism in Notre Dame's matchup with the Tigers?
Ian Book.
Okay.
He's played well year. I think when you get into a matchup like this, and I'll say secondary to that too, is Notre Dame's offensive line they've been able to protect. There have been times throughout the season where they haven't been able to run consistently. But if there's one thing that they've done, it's been they've kept Ian Book fairly clean, and he's also helped them out by extending some plays and making plays with his feet, too. The other part of that, too, I think this defense, I mean, there's been times, I don't know why, I've questioned whether or not they were going to play well, and week in and week out, they continue to show up. So, you know, for me early on, is Notre Dame's offensive line going to be able to control Clemson's front four? Doesn't necessarily mean anything to dominate them. Mm-hmm. Can it be a wash? Are they not getting dominated?
Right.
So that for me is the first thing that I'm going to look at. If they're able to do that, I think this is going to be a good football game. Defensively, I don't know if Notre Dame has faced a running back as talented. as they'll see from the Clemson Tigers, and they have a good quarterback too. So, I mean, regardless of who you play here in the top four, they're all good football teams.
Yeah, absolutely. When I look at this, to me, I agree with what you're saying about Ian Book, because they have to have, I think, that kind of quarterback if they're going to be able to defeat Clemson. But at the same time, what gives me probably the most reason for optimism is Notre Dame's defense, because while Notre Dame has not seen a defense like Clemson's, Clemson all season long, basically they haven't seen a defense as good as Notre Dame since last year's college football playoff. So I think Notre Dame's defense allowing just 17 points per game, and the fact that they don't give up a lot of big plays in the passing game, and that's what Clemson wants to do, because like if you look at the difference between Lawrence and Book, Lawrence is pretty accurate as well, but he's got the bigger arm, and he's got the kind of receivers who can stretch the defense, and they make some big plays downfield. But again, Notre Dame's defense really has not given up those kind of plays. Now they'll give them up every now and then, but it tends to be, it seems like, later in the game after they've figured out, okay, well, and it helps that they've been able to play with the lead most of the time as well. But most of those plays tend to have come when the opponent is in comeback mode and they're willing to give up some yardage just with their zone.
Well, it's no secret. I mean, Notre Dame's defensive has given up some yards this year.
Right.
But they've been able to get off the field in key situations, whether it be third down, force teams to kick field goals. But really their MO has been some timely turnovers and takeaways.
Yeah.
They've done a nice job of teaching that, practicing that, but then also on Saturdays going out there and actually delivering some pretty important turnovers, but also momentum killers for opposing teams where they may have been driving. And this is a defense that, you know, they're not going to give up big plays. You're probably going to go, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards to score a touchdown. Are you going to be able to do that consistently for four quarters? Not a lot of teams have been able to do that. The other thing that I point to is this staff has done a really good job of making adjustments halftime. You know, some areas maybe they were giving up some yards in the first half. They've played very good football defensively in the second half of games, which has been a huge help for this Irish offense too, as they needed to grow and develop some chemistry throughout the season. So, you know, you're going to have to put together four quarters of really good football, offensive, defensively, and special teams. You know, that's one area you could look at as being an X factor with two very good football teams. You expect, my expectations are, you got here for a reason. You're both 12-0. So I expect for both teams to play very well. I expect both defenses to play very well. I expect both offenses to play very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that being said, then is there a play within special teams that could change the outlook of this game? And then, you know, pointing at turnovers, who's going to win that battle too?
So, if Ian Book is what makes you the most confident, what is maybe your biggest concern then when you look at Clemson?
Well, they're front four. I mean, if they are able to get to Ian Book, I think that then it's going to put a lot of pressure on this defense to really limit what Clemson is going to be able to do. And you know, it's kind of an if-then for me. I think that, you know, if Notre Dame is able to protect Ian Book, then they have a great opportunity to win. I think it's going to be in the 7 to 10 point range. I think it's going to be a good football game. And, man, Vegas always seems to know, right around that 12 points, right?
They're still sitting on it too.
They are sitting on
it.
Does
that surprise you? I mean, again, we're talking lines, and you're right. Vegas does tend to know, but it's also always not perfect. But
no.
At the same time, I'm surprised where that line is, that it hasn't moved. I do you think it's because Notre Dame fans are more scared than maybe Vegas thought they would be?
Possibly. I mean, I don't know what Notre Dame fans, what they're laying on that.
Yeah.
And my other side of that is, you know, if Notre Dame is not able to protect Ian Book and they're going to have to rely on this defense, I think there's a lot of pressure, and I think it could go over that 12 points.
Well, and I think when we look at Clemson's front four specifically, that great defensive line they have with the three All-Americans and another guy who was an All-American last year who didn't even make it this year. So you really have four different guys up there. I mean, we look at the ability. I look at it starting out with what you said. Ian Book has to be able to get off to a quick start. He can't take a half, I don't think, against a defense like this in a team like this, like he has, whether it's USC, Northwestern, Pittsburgh. He can't have that kind of start to a game. And so maybe that means Chip Long, while he doesn't want to panic, he's going to have to make some different adjustments earlier than he has before. But, I mean, we look at Notre Dame still has to be able to run the ball. And I don't think that they can necessarily force the issue, but at the same time, I don't think they can completely forsake the run early on either. So it's an interesting sort of little chess match that we can see play out.
And within the passing game, you know, if the running game isn't working, you can still give the illusion of run through play action or move the pocket throws, whether it's bootlegs, you know, half rolls, some dummy fakes. You know, those are all very helpful within the passing game, even if the run game is not working, because defensive players are very conditioned to, you know, to those types of fakes and that type of play action. So I think that, you know, regardless of how the run game goes, you know, within the passing game, they're going to have some options to make sure that they're at least giving the illusion of runs.
He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. So let's go back again to now. Notre Dame is still a heavy underdog in this game, even though it's a 2-3 matchup. So when you look at this game, Evan, from a national perspective, not from what Notre Dame is, Notre Dame thinks they are, any of that kind of stuff. From a national perspective, if Notre Dame beats Clemson, this is only year 5 of the college football playoff, but do you think it would be viewed as the biggest upset in the history of the playoff?
Have we seen a larger point spread? I don't know. I mean, based on that, you can definitely make an argument for it. I mean, I don't know. Both teams are 12-0. It's hard to say it would be an upset. Both teams haven't lost yet.
Now, again, that's what we think, though. But when you look at double-digit underdog, like people down there in Georgia, probably Alabama, in that part of the country, who all think that they should have gotten in over Notre Dame. If Notre Dame wins this game, you know that they're going to consider it a monumental upset,
yeah,
right?
Probably.
So, and that's what, and I mean, a lot of this, I think, has to do more with history than actual what's going on with this team, the way Notre Dame is viewed. Because most people want to go back to 2012 and talk about how that team performed against a great Alabama team in the national championship game. You and I were both down there for that game. We know things did not work out that night. But this team is so different from that team.
Well, it's also not fair to...
But it's just, that's what people want to keep talking about. Okay, Notre Dame ran the table, but now they're in this moment, they really don't have a chance because of...
That's why we play the game, Sean. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean...
But again, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about what we... Because we've been here, we've seen this team... I mean, year after year, you were part of the team, and now you're an alum, and you've covered Notre Dame for several years now since graduating from Notre Dame. But, I mean, so we see how this team was built, the way it's performed week after week and everything. But I just think that the national perception would be that this would be a really big upset if Notre Dame is able to beat Clemson.
Yes, I think that would be true based on outside perception, but I think within, I think the expectation is that you win the football game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'm with you. Yeah. I think it's going to be decided a touchdown one way or the other. I don't think it's going to be double digit one way or the other.
Well, let's hope not. I've had a discussion with a few Notre Dame fans just like, I just hope it's a good football game. You know, after the sour taste that they had in 2012 was,
I think it will
you
be.
Don't want to be embarrassed.
See, but again, I think a lot of it has to do with that.
Yeah.
With what happened in 2012. And then you've got a Clemson team who won a national championship a couple of years ago and who is in their fourth consecutive college football.
That's pretty
playoff.
Good, huh?
So I think, yeah, I mean, it is good. But I think a lot of it is based more on track record than what's actually going on right now with these teams.
I would agree with
that.
That's
what I think the perception think so. Around the country seems to be. Okay, so when you look at all the clamor, and again, you and I haven't had a chance to talk since before the USC game. We haven't sat down and done this show. But when you look at all this clamor then, when you talk about national talking points, and whether it's Desmond Howard or Kirk Herbstreit or whoever it happens to be, when it came down to selection and everything else, do you think Notre Dame right now is any closer to feeling like it needs to join a conference than they've been before?
Not since they made it in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're fine.
I think they're okay.
Yeah. But, and I think the same thing. I think it all worked out, but they ran the table. They
Correct.
Were 12-0.
If they had one loss.
Right.
Yes.
So do you think that they, under the current format, that Notre Dame has to feel like they have to run the table in any given year
Absolutely.
To feel safe?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, odds are pretty against that happening consistently.
Unless they have one of their losses is to say like a top five team, okay? But that'd be hard too, because then that team's probably going to be in as well.
Right.
But then they have like three other wins versus top 10 teams. And a lot of that is it's hit or miss year to year because your schedule is set. It's not like, okay, you know, we're going to play these guys who traditionally are in the top 10 and then you have to count on beating them. Well, you also then run the risk of losing a second game and then you're most definitely out. So, yeah, I think if you're Notre Dame, it's 12-0 to get in or 11-1 and then you need to be in the Big Ten and win the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah. So now the most recent talk is a lot of it's generating from the Big Ten. Expand the playoff because the Big Ten's been left out. The Big Ten Conference champion specifically has been left out 3 years in a row. Big Ten has been left out for the last two because I say the champion has been left out three because Ohio State got in
Correct.
3 years ago without playing in the conference championship game. So what do you think about all the expansion
talk? Expand it to eight.
You like that?
Power Five champions win, three at large.
So you do like you like the Power Five champions. I think that the only way it's going to expand to eight is if there's an agreement to let the Power Five
Yes.
conference champions in.
Yes.
Now, I don't necessarily like that because, like, when you look at this year, now granted, Washington ended up just outside the top 10 or even the top eight.
If you have a weak conference
so.
Champion.
Yeah, you got a weak conference champion. If Northwestern does upset Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game.
They earned it then, right?
Do you? Well, but that's a one-game situation. Do you really want to see Northwestern play Alabama in that case if it's this year?
I don't think Northwestern fans would want to see that happen.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly. So, yeah, and one of the proposals that was floated when the story came out last week in The Athletic, it came from a former Big 12 commissioner, was you let the Power Five conference champions in. You also reserve a spot for the best group of five team and then two at large.
Hmm.
And I don't like that because, and I think as Eric Hansen said, you have to have some kind of stipulation that group of five team is ranked, you know, at least top 12 maybe or something like that. You can't just reserve a spot.
Well, no. If you go three at large and you're one of the top teams, then you'd be in it.
I do like that. So doesn't expanding the playoff, as far as Notre Dame is concerned, aren't they probably better off if you expand?
Yeah, maybe that's why we're saying that right now.
When you talk about keeping independence and all that kind of stuff.
It would keep them independent, yeah.
Right. I definitely
because
think
I mean
it
you
would.
could still get in with one loss if there's eight spots.
Yeah,
I think if you lose one game right now in its current scenario, there's no chance you make the top four if you're Notre Dame.
Right. What about the conference championship games? Can you keep the conference championship games if you're going to expand to eight? Because you're talking about adding another round. I think you've got to get rid of it. And that was that proposal that I was just talking about. That was part of that as well, that this
they would propose getting rid of it.
Getting rid of the conference championship games because you're essentially replacing those with another round of the playoffs so that you're not playing until February when it's all said and done.
I think that would have to be part of the discussion and how you'd want that to look. But you could build it into, you know, the conference championships being, I don't know, round one of the playoffs. You know, I don't know how exactly you'd structure it, but I don't like the month off. I mean, why not just say we're done by Christmas? Let everybody go home.
Well, see, and that's what I'm saying. If you replace the conference championship games, which are, I mean, let's be honest, they're really not that important.
The committee has said they aren't.
Right. They're really not that important.
Based on their decisions.
Yeah. So the biggest question is, for the where the conferences are concerned, can you replace that revenue? Because that's what those games are largely about, is the revenue. Can you replace that revenue by guaranteed cash flow by expanding the playoff? And I would think that you would be able to do that, and then some. Because you're replacing games that are at least 50%, depending on 50% irrelevant. Because, I mean, look at Georgia and Alabama. If they don't play the SEC championship game, Georgia's getting in.
Right.
So
if we went under the new structure, say, and went to eight teams, you'd have the Power Five, you'd have Alabama, you'd have Clemson, you'd have Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Washington.
Right.
Okay. So then you'd have an at-large for Notre Dame, based on how rankings are now,
right.
Georgia,
right.
and Michigan, which would
exactly.
mean UCF is still left out.
Yeah.
But under the secondary one, what you were saying was you potentially would be able to have UCF in.
No, I think UCF would have been in either scenario, whether you went on the five champions, because aren't they still ranked in the top?
Yes, but the problem is Washington being the PAC winner.
Oh, it's because they would replace them.
They're ranked ninth.
Right.
And UCF is at eight.
Right.
But if you're going to say the
But then you get the at-large power, spots.
Right, but those would be taken by Georgia, Notre Dame, and Michigan. Because they're all ranked ahead.
Which, deservedly so, because I still think Michigan is. But look, UCF, and I realize their fans have been yelling for 2 years now. Where were they 2 years ago when they were 0-12 or 3 years ago? These fans, they're largely front runners. They didn't care about UCF football 3 years
ago.
And when UCF is 8-5 or 8-4 or whatever in a couple years, I don't think
they're going to care. I saw an interesting post as well that UCF turned down a three-game series to Florida.
The 2-for-1, yeah.
Compared to, like, well, Boise State for a while was like, well, they didn't play anybody. All right, well, then let's go play. We'll go play anywhere and anywhere to try to build up our credibility so that we can get into these BCS bowl games.
And part of the problem, too, is they didn't necessarily know 4 years ago that they were going to be this good. But if you're turning down those opportunities, I mean, and there's going to be some cash payout, I would think, if you're getting a 2-for-1 as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're turning down cash. They're turning down
the
opportunity.
Take someone off
your schedule. Yeah, to play an SEC team. I mean,
play 13 games.
that's right.
Why not?
I mean, and the other thing that's being floated is UCF should join the Big 12. The Big 12 went through that whole thing a little bit more than a year ago where they auditioned, essentially, all these different programs, and UCF was one of them. And so they made all these different schools apply for membership, and then they sat down and they weighed everything, and then they said, we're not going to expand. So.
Pull the rug right under.
It is. It's all just a giant mess. But yeah, I mean, I do think that staying, if Notre Dame wants to stay independent, that the expansion of the playoff is probably the best thing that's going to help that. Because if you go 11-1, 3 years in a row, and you're left out of the playoff, that's one of those things that Jack Swarbrick talked about way back when, part of this affiliation with the ACC as the safety net, that you could feel like you're pushed into that situation if you're consistently 11-1 and you end up getting left out of the playoff. So,
yep, I'm with you.
Yep. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, some more stuff that we're going to talk about. I've got some Matt Painter comments, some new things going on at Sharply Training. We will do all that when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharply, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharply continues, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. He's Evan Sharply. I'm Sean Steyers. Leprechaun Lunch
Presented by Carmela's at McCree's, the perfect place for holiday parties for your business group and family for lunch or dinner. Reserve yours today. Curt Outdoor Living, make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis. Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Leck Leitner Door, Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Contact Ryan Hale in South Bend or Jerry Hunt also in South Bend. And also by Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time. So a lot of stuff that I want to talk about here, Evan, and I'll play you first part of this Purdue head coach Matt Painter audio and see what you think. He was talking about this last week after Notre Dame's loss to Purdue at the Crossroads Classic.
You have to get over yourself. It's a real hard thing to do. I don't know how many people we have here that played high school basketball and then played college basketball. But in high school basketball, like, you know, like, how many points you have in your head. It's a real selfish thing, but it's a very natural thing, because your whole life, you know, you've equated playing well to scoring. Then as you grow in college and you can get there, you have to normally play a role before you can be a major guy, and sometimes you never get out of that role and you're always a role player. You know, you have to be able to give yourself to the team, but get over, you know, those type of things and those kind of, you know, you're not going to get on this team if you can just shoot well and that's it, you know, be able to help us. You know, we need everybody to be able to defend. We need everybody to be able to do other things. And right now we're not very good at that. You got to be able to get over yourself and sacrifice. You know, when you look over there and you see guys cheering and giving energy, and you're normally going to go in the game and play better. And those guys that are sitting there, you know, being duds and, you know, not cheering for their teammate, you know, when you go in there, you know, that's what you're thinking about. I should be in there. And then when you get the opportunity, you don't play well. So it's really a maturation process, and you always are going to have a guy or two on your team that way. You just are.
So that's Matt Painter, the Purdue head coach, last week. Obviously a little frustrated this year, I think, with how things are going after having a couple of really good NCAA tournament teams the last couple of years. But just your thoughts, Evan, when you hear Matt Painter
say that. Well, this kind of, it kind of went viral.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of, I know I saw a lot of high school parents, some coaches post, tweet, Facebook.
And I was surprised at, I mean, there were, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because it's social media, so everyone's got a crack at it, but there were polar opposite reactions. I mean, there were some people saying, well, it's no wonder nobody wants to go play for him. And there's other people, you know, completely agreeing with what he was saying.
I mean, it's true. I mean, it is true. You know, that's what happens a lot of times. When you leave your high school, you're usually maybe the big man or big lady on campus, and then you get into a college program, and now you're kind of a smaller fish in a bigger pond. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you can't come in and make an impact right away. There are players that they're able to do that, but for the vast majority, when you come in, there is going to be a specific role that you need to play, and you need to be part of that. I think, you know, the culture, you know, in how it's maybe changed over the last 8 to 10 years, you see more transfers within all of college sports, male, female. I don't think necessarily matters. I think you see more of that if something doesn't work out. And it's hard to predict if it's a good fit. Like, you go through the recruiting process and you do your due diligence,
yeah,
and try to make sure that the coaching staff works for you. But sometimes you get it wrong. And so I get that. But there is a certain level of, yeah, this is a you're playing a team sport, so you need to make sure that you're buying in. The best teams that I played on and played with were guys where we had some specific role type players, and our chemistry was really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough no matter what. Everybody wants to play. You know, something I always talk to my son about as he played multiple sports growing up is every time you go up a level, it's gonna get tougher. Mm-hmm. The competition's going to get tougher if you want to earn that spot. Little league to middle school to high school to college, wherever it happens to be, the competition's going to get tougher, and you just have to work a little bit harder. That's all there is to it if you want to stay ahead. And again, when you talk about, and this is something we've even talked to Mike Bray about before, everyone develops
at different rates. And speaking of a guy like that, Aaron Bond, who was a pretty good high school baseball player when he was here at South Bend Clay, part of a sectional championship team when he was at Clay High School. And he's a guy that you work with.
Yeah.
And he's made some social media rounds a little bit as well, because Trevor Bauer, the Indians pitcher, has had this deal. He was calling out any professional hitter who wanted to come work with him in the cage. I think he would give him $100 or something,
right? Yeah, he said he'd pay for a month of training at Driveline out in Washington, and then if anybody hit a home run off of him, he'd pay them $1,000.
Nice.
So, yeah, Aaron's done a really good job. He's in our strength and conditioning program, working to get stronger. He's out there, you know, making some tweaks in his swing, trying to elevate the ball a little bit more. Had a great career at San Jack, JUCO, and is in the Giants organization. He's got some power potential. He just needs to get the ball in the air a little bit more.
All right. So that is Aaron Bond, and we'll keep looking out for him, and they've had a little bit of fun. I know Aaron doubled off Trevor Bauer. And
he was close.
Was letting the world know it.
I mean, and Trevor's been a good sport about it, too. I think you know, they've got a really good environment out there in Washington, and what a great experience for Aaron to go out there and train with some of these big league guys. And, you know, hopefully a couple years down the road, we'll see him up there, too.
Absolutely. All right, real quick before we have to wrap up, got about a minute here, Evan. I saw some new things going on. You've got a new schedule of training over there at Sharpley Training.
Yeah, we're just revamping a couple of our classes. We've got a boot camp that my wife is going to be running, a little more entry level. I mean, if you work out quite a bit, it's a good fit too. It's going to be more high intensity interval, some circuits, a lot more body weight stations. We'll have a couple of open lift days as well, where if you don't want to do a class, you want to come in and just get a good pump, maybe some biceps and triceps here to get ready for beach season.
All right.
So we've got
it'll
all that
be here
going
before
on.
You know it.
Yeah, it will.
I mean, everyone, like the big box, I guess you'd call it, fitness places are filling up.
I'm sure they
this
are.
This time of year, right?
So, well, no, right now they're probably going to be empty.
Yeah.
Because everyone's eating. In two weeks, they'll be full.
Yeah, that's what I mean. All right. So check out Sharpley Training again, sharpleytraining.com, and also search any social media platform. Don't forget, we're going to be at Four Winds Casino South Bend 1 week from today. Evan Sharpley and I will be out there the day before Notre Dame's Cotton Bowl performance against Clemson. Stop out and see us, Four Winds Casino South Bend. You can get one of those free limited edition green shamrock caps. Evan, talk to you next week.
See ya.
WSBT South Bend.